Hey, this is Rob Unspach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes for those keeping count. This is episode 382, and I know a lot of entrepreneurs out there struggle with this very notion of equity partnerships. I've been one of them. I've been burned. And so I wanted to bring on an expert who talks equity partnerships, lives equity partnerships, and can help explain how to make them work better. Welcome, Fred Gleick, and thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
I loved it. I love the chair, though. It reminds me of like some space future thing, and
that's what I was going for.
Falling asleep doing it.
Cool.
You know the intro with the equity partnerships, that always, you know, for I've been an entrepreneur for 30 years, and there's been some partnerships that worked out great. Some really went up in flames. And, you know, even some of my book projects were toast before they even started. And I think that's the biggest thing right now is, you know, how can an entrepreneur expand their income without doing a lot more work or, you know, doing more work for someone else? They figure, hey, you know, wow, you know, that's an awesome shiny object there, and I want to be part of it, but will I have to get rid of my own business to help this person? And so those are all the questions, I think, or the frustrations entrepreneurs have about, you know, the multiple streams of income, you know, the ways to make more money, and you know. I when I jumped on your website, I'm like, wow, you know, he really knows his stuff.
Well, thanks. Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't think that everybody who watches or listens to this particular podcast should be immediately jumping into doing equity deals. I think that for most people, they have to have an established base of traditional consulting or coaching business that comes in through retainers or flat fees. Mm-hmm. Once someone has those established, and it's kind of like a base salary where they have enough money coming in to cover expenses every month, then they can start to explore the idea of doing equity deals, and not before then. I think that's step number one to understand is don't do this as your first thing right out of the gate, because it does entail a lot of risk. I'd say for myself, I'd say 3 out of 10, if I'm hitting 300, 3 out of 10 of my deals work out well.
Right.
Not bad.
Yeah, I know in the copywriting field, that's big. You know, they're going to design this whole marketing sales funnel for you, but they want the tail end. They want the prize. And a lot of times that prize doesn't materialize. And so, you know, I think it's sometimes it's easier as a coach or a consultant to say, hey, here's my fee. But that scares the potential client away going, oh my God, that's so high. And then they'll come up with, hey, do you want to do an equity partnership? And the consultant or the copywriter is like, I don't know.
For people just starting out, I actually think a hybrid version of what you're describing is probably the best. Which is, if you were approached by a potential client as a copywriter and they were a little bit bristling by the large fees that you might be charging, you could always do the following. And again, you need a really good agreement to make this happen, a written agreement, which is to give them some kind of a discount off your normal amount. Let's say you normally charge X. Take that X and make it 30% or 50% of X and add on an equity component based on results on the back end, so that you're not completely putting yourself at the will of the client's abilities to implement what you actually tell them to do.
Yeah. And I noticed that, you know, early on in my consulting career, I would have a lot of people approach me, hey, Rob, can you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I need the money now to pay bills. I can't afford to wait 6 months to a year to, you know, for this deal to finally pay off if it does. And so there's always that risk reward that you have to look at.
100%. And I think that, again, going back to the original comment that I made, which is that I don't think it's a good idea to use equity coming out of the blocks, but rather as a strategy that you employ once you have. And I usually tell people, somebody says to me, well, how much is that? I say, I don't know. I don't know what your expenses are. But I think that in most cases, if someone has a base of business anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000 a month, where they've got established clients paying them regularly, then it's worthwhile to explore equity deals because, again, you have a little bit of a cushion. So if you strike out on your first one or two, you're not left not being able to pay the mortgage or the rent.
Well, I know that there's some industries that you can't do that in. You know, law firms are one of them. Although that would be an awesome way to make some money.
Although you do have PI lawyers.
I mean,
oftentimes, you know, their compensation is entirely based on them getting a case settled. Mm-hmm. So I know that there's certain legal restrictions. And again, I wouldn't want anybody to violate any kind of laws. I know that in securities as well, there are some terms and things that you can't do.
Right. And I know that in some states, I think Arizona is one of them, marketing firms can actually own or have ownership in law firms.
Ah, that's new to me.
And you know, that's been floating around for a while, and I thought, oh, I wonder if more states would do that. But maybe that creates a conflict of interest.
Potentially. I could see it, but I also like the idea of someone marketing for a law firm getting their compensation tied to results.
Right.
But it does create some interesting possible conflict, obviously.
So, you know, it's not something that people just say, hey, I'm going to get into this business doing equity partnerships or teaching equity partnerships. How did you start?
Good question. So about 16 years ago, I had a guy show up at one of my boot camps. I used to hold these 1 week long boot camps at my house in Vegas when I lived there. I'm now in Reno. And people would come to my place. I would bunk them for a week, had a 4-bedroom house, 3 bedrooms. They'd be 2 in a room. They'd pay me a bunch of money for the week, feed them, clothe them. They'd bring their own outfits. And I would then give them a system that they could then take and go out into the world. I was at the time really heavily, I mean, for many years, I was number one ahead of Dan Kennedy for the terms information products and information marketing. Mm-hmm. And so people would come and learn my system. And what happened was I had a guy show up in 2009, December, and he was a voiceover artist. As we went around the room introducing ourselves, I said, oh, that's interesting. I actually had an interest in doing that many years ago in New York City when I put together a voiceover tape sometime in the mid 80s. I produced 300 of these audio tapes, still have 298 of them left because good intentions, no implementation. But when he went around and he told me that, I said, wow, that's really interesting. I was actually interested in doing something like that years ago. So at the end of the 1 week, I had gotten to know him as a person, liked him. We got along well. And I said, well, why don't we do this? Rather than me sending you out on your own to do this, he was basically creating a whole ecosystem for potential voiceover artists to learn how to do it and how to market their services. I said, why don't we do it together? So that was the genesis of the whole thing. And it started as an equity deal. And it then recently he decided to leave and go off and play with his grandkids. And we put on one of our best students to take over. But that was a 16-year journey of learning exactly how to do that. And I've since done a lot more of those, but that's where it started.
Yeah, my foray into marketing started in 1998, learning from Dan Kennedy. I met him in Arizona. But, you know, one of my marketing superheroes was Joe Sugarman, who lived in Vegas.
Sure.
And I met him.
Blue Blockers.
Yeah, I met him. I think it was 2013, 2014, right after my first book came out. And he took me out to lunch and took me to his office there in Vegas. And the stories he told. And it was funny because here's a guy who basically did the same thing. You know, he took products, built marketing campaigns around them, and most of them failed. Most of them failed. Blue Blockers was the biggest one, and that made him probably billions.
You know, yeah, made him a lot of money. And again, I think that his compensation was all, you know, he was getting paid on results on that one because it was his deal.
Yeah, yeah. It's but you know, as he got older, he brought in family to run everything, and didn't do
just
so well.
Death on that one.
Yeah, and somebody else took it over after he died. I don't know. I think they're local to me.
Speaking but, of when you decide to leave the planet, that's one of the things I like about equity deals. Is all of my equity deals are structured. And this is something that people don't really, I don't think, understand, which is if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, my daughter will continue to get paid a piece of the action ad infinitum for all those deals.
Wow. That is incredible. You know, and here,
but it's better than life insurance policy, or as good or better.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the structure, because, you know, for people that, yeah, we're gonna bring in lawyers, we're gonna bring in, you know, contracts. But do we need to know how much these people make so that, you know, down the road, hey, you know, you made X amount. Let me see your books. I want to see how much you're gonna pay me, or, you know, because some people will try to renege on those deals. Sometimes, you know, they're not gonna be as honest as they should be. So how do we keep them accountable?
It's a really good question. And I put a couple things in place to make sure that doesn't happen. Number one, a number of years back, I wrote an article talking about the pain of disconnect, which is if you control the systems by which someone makes payment and accumulates a database of names, you have the control over that, or at least you can share the control. So in my case, whether it was originally years and years ago, I don't know if you remember oneshoppingcart.com, that's where I started. One of my first good equity deals, by the way. But one of the things that I do is I make sure that I am in control, or at least in half control, of the method by which payment occurs so that I can track the results. And in the equity deals that I create, it's always based on a split of the profit after expenses. Mm-hmm. And when I first get started, like I did in the voiceover field, Bill DeWeese at the time put up his credit card and our initial investment into various things. And he had to get paid back first before we did our split. But everything was based on the money that was running through at the time. I think that was maybe originally one shopping cart, but then ClickFunnels and now GHL. So that I could actually see the money that was going through, in addition to our contract, which clearly delineated who got what and when. Right. So if you control the method by which the payment occurs, or at least have partial control of it, in addition to having a solid agreement, which, by the way, I never involve lawyers. I do a simple one-page agreement. If you do those two things, you're pretty well protected. Now, if somebody runs off to Switzerland, good luck.
Yeah, you know, I've had, over my 30-year career as an entrepreneur, I've had some partners that, you know, I probably should have done more due diligence. You know, the first one, this was back in 1999.
Was what happened?
Horrible. See, I had a carpet cleaning business that I started in 95, and I started a flooring store because, you know, carpet cleaning, flooring, it's kind of a natural
progression. Joe Polish, huh?
And, you know, I met Joe Polish and started learning all this marketing, and I'm like, okay, well, great. We're getting sales. We're getting busy. Let's expand. So I brought someone in to manage a flooring store. And the first thing he says to me, he goes, Rob, I need a paycheck. So can you make me an employee instead of a partner? Sure, I can do that. The problem was is that I went on vacation and he's like, I don't like the way things are being run. So he changes the alarm code. He changes a bunch of other stuff. He leaves, you know, locks me out. And so I had to have the police come, and the police says, well, he says he's a partner. We can't do anything about it. I said, Nope. Said he's an employee. I have the record. So I got him to, he was kicked out, but it was a mess. And I'm like, I'm not doing that.
Well, earlier before we started talking about marriages, and maybe since you've had one long one and I've had multiple short ones, the last one wasn't too bad. As I told you, I've been trying each time, but, one of the things is in vetting before you do any kind of a deal, it's really imperative. And I would suggest that for most people, if they want to start getting into doing equity deals, that they start with kind of a trial marriage, if you will, which is you do X amount of time, 90 days to start, where you're doing just revenue sharing. You're not yet moving to equity. So you do something for 90 days and you get to see how people behave and how they react. And I think one of the big keys to that, which you probably even know the person I'm thinking of when I come up with this in my mind. I went out to lunch with a guy who was a well-known marketer many years ago. And I saw the way that he treated a waitress. And from that experience, I would never not only do business with him, I never really wanted to be around him anymore.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that I've run across over 30 years. And I thought, you know, how are they even still in business? The way they treat people comes back around.
100%.
And, you know, even the people that they hang out with, you know, can tell you a story. And I'm not going to drop names. I've seen enough of them over the years.
Sure.
But some of them are making millions of dollars. Some of them have info products that you probably bought. And they're horrible people.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
And, you know, I've always been and see, this is the thing. When I started the consulting service in 2001, so my Unspoc Media is now 25 years old. Mm-hmm. My cleaning business, I sold it when I was 19 years old. So in 2014, I sold the business. I was tired of running two businesses. It was just too much because I was running one, doing consulting, helping clients with their marketing. And it's like, let's just focus on. But a lot of the marketers I met having the cleaning business, I don't associate with anymore. You know, but one of the things that I've always strived to do is always have a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even my cleaning business, everybody else said, oh, well, Rob, we have a guarantee too. I said, well, I'm doubling it. So I instituted not only a 100% guarantee, but a 200% guarantee. If you weren't happy, not only I would give your money back, but I would pay someone else to come in and clean up after me.
How many times did you have to honor that?
Zero.
Beautiful.
But I was very particular on the clients that I took on. You know, it wasn't, hey, I'm going after all these apartment complexes because you know that they're all going to take advantage of that. But I also offered a free room of carpet cleaning so they could try me out.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to know me. They got to appreciate. Then if they wanted more work, great. But I didn't pressure them.
I think what you're describing is very similar to what I'm describing as it relates to the 90-day revenue share, which is if you do that first, you get to see what you're dealing with and who you're dealing with.
Right. And so when I sold the business, the guy who took it over didn't want to do the guarantees anymore, didn't want to do the free room, you know, cleaning. He was going after the cheap clients.
Yeah, why do what's working, Rob?
And I'm like, dude, 6 months later, he was out of business. And I'm like, and you know, and occasionally I get a call from him. I say, how you doing? And he's working second shift for a school making above minimum wage. And I said, why? You had potential. He goes, yeah, but now I have health care.
That you could have paid for with doing it correctly.
Yeah. So, but even in my marketing now, I still, and this is one thing I resisted for a long time because I couldn't control Google. I couldn't control Facebook. Yeah. I couldn't control, but I said, you know what, the hell with it. I'm going to throw out the guarantee. I'm going to make it better. And so when people go to my website, my guarantee is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my best to vet them, to make sure that they're getting, you know, this great service. And sometimes it is a dog and pony show. But I'm going to deliver to them results that they can say, wow, Rob, this was awesome. I want to continue. I want to continue not only giving you money, but I want to continue making lots of money from the marketing. So I have to have that in there. And I'm not saying it gives me an edge above other marketers, but nobody else is doing it.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it, but I've got, so I now have kind of two distinct silos of my business. The one is what we've been talking about, which is the equity deals. But for the last 2 years or so, I've been also teaching my process. And so I've got the one fredgleeklive.com, and I've got joinfredgleek.com. The Join Fred Gleek talks about my partnership deals in which I don't get paid a dime up front. In the other one, where I'm teaching people how to do equity deals, mm-hmm. what I do is I give them, they pay me under 10 grand to learn my process, and I promise to give them or find them at least one equity deal in 90 days. And if I don't do it, I'll keep renewing that for up to a year. And if I don't deliver in a year, I give them all their money back. Because you know what? If I'm going to deal with someone, I want to know that they're going to stand behind the product like you did with carpets. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't deserve the money if right. I don't deliver.
Yeah. It's we're in a position now and with technology the way it is, trust has to be that frontline, service that we offer.
Agreed.
And it's we got this know, like, and trust thing. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. During COVID, I added a fourth thing. We have to feel safe. Mm-hmm. So it's when people come to you, oh, Rob, I trust you. Okay, but do you feel safe? And so, yes, maybe you may be feeling safe as part of trust. But there's a lot of businesses that have been burned. And so they just want that extra. Just want that extra that you're going to deliver. Because they're spending a lot of money. Or whether it's a upfront money or an equity partnership, mm-hmm. they want to know that that marriage is going to last, more than 90 days.
Yep.
For me and my wife, it's 37 years.
Again, don't rub it in now.
but it takes a lot of work, and we have six kids, six grandkids. And so, it's give and take.
Nice. Yeah. Well, then in your situation, I mean, I think that's why you might have resonated with my talking about the fact that my deals allow me to pass on the equity in mm-hmm. a small way. Usually it's usually set up as 10%. So if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, my daughter continues to get 10% on any and all equity deals I've set up ad infinitum. Now, luckily, she's kind of marketing oriented. So if she wanted to, she could step in there and say, well, rather than 10%, you pay me 20%, I'll actually get involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My kids didn't want to get involved with the cleaning business. It was too hard, too physical. And I'm not saying they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it after 19 years. It was just getting too much.
Yep.
And so that's why I sold it. But, for marketing, I wish, they would get into it. So because it's just, there is a lot, not only a lot to learn, but it's fun. I love coaching clients of all. When I first started coaching, it was just mostly carpet cleaner because that's what I knew.
Sure.
And then, I gravitated to lawyers and doctors, and I've written books for lawyers and doctors and, other speakers. And I get to explore subjects and niches that I never thought were even in existence before.
Totally agree. I love the idea that, I can find out about something as a result of partnering with someone or coaching them, mm-hmm. again, that I knew nothing about, that I'm fascinated by.
Yeah. Yeah. But for me, it's, I've never run out of ideas to help people. I've never run out of content. I've produced over 60 books in 13 years and people are like, well, Rob, I'm having a hard time just writing one book, and you're writing four or five a year. I have a system, and that system works, and I love to be able to help people share their stories. do all the books make money? No. But, and here's the thing that I tell people. These are business books. These aren't Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling authored books that are going to produce billions of dollars. I mean, that would be nice. But these are ways to build your authority, to build your credibility, to get hired to do coaching, to, you know, get on podcasts, to get on stages. But a lot of them cannot fathom how one book can do that. And so they procrastinate. And I've had one lawyer reaching out to me every single year for probably 8 years now. You know, we should do my book. Okay, but my price keeps going up every year and you still haven't done it.
Should have done it 8 years ago.
Yeah, and it's like, you know. So I think there is a fear. There is a fear of, and I'm going to use my father-in-law as an example. He died a few years ago, but he was a self-employed carpenter, and he built fantastic things. You know, you'd ask him to build you an antique piece of furniture, and he would build something that looked like it came out of, you know, 100 years ago. Wow. It was that authentic. And so I created this whole massive marketing campaign for him to build hidden rooms, secret rooms. And he goes, well, what if I get too busy?
Raise your prices, dude.
And I'm like, what do you mean? What? Just accept this as a gift and do the work. And he talked himself out of it. He never did it.
Ah, too bad.
And I knew that that would have been the thing that made him the money, that put him on the map, that you know, he could, you know, pass on to, you know, my brother-in-law or whomever.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to do it because he thought fear.
Yeah. Some people just aren't built for this. They aren't built for understanding, and that's okay. I mean, some people are built to work for others and other people are built to work for themselves.
Yeah, I can't work for anybody. So I've been doing this too long. And you know, even when I have a client that comes to me, you know, they have to understand my sarcasm. And so if they're serious and sarcasm's not their bag, we're not going to get along. And so it's going to be very hard. So, you know, we have to be able to pick and choose who we work for.
Yeah, I can relate because I did improv in New York for 20 years, and my snarky sense of humor that often comes out is not usually enjoyed by the wrong kind of people for me.
No, I created a whole series of Rob versus books. They're very sarcastic. My take on dealing with scammers and hackers and lousy customer service. And the first one came out in 2019 called Rob versus the Scammers. And followed by Rob versus the Morons and on and on and on. And, you know, the one book was called Rob versus the Entitled that came out right at COVID.
Nice.
And Amazon, somebody got triggered because of the title. So Amazon took it off for 6 months. Fight to get it back on. And, you bastards, you know, just these are sarcastic books. They make people laugh. No.
Yeah, did you see? It reminds me of the Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, who sounds like he's right up your alley in terms of his approach. I think his latest one is called "You Can't Fix Stupid" or something.
You know, those books—they did rub people the wrong way, and I'm glad.
Good. Yeah.
You know, but then I had people call me and they'll say, "Rob, I almost peed myself while flying on the plane to get to the next, because I was reading your book. It was so funny. I didn't want to put it down." You know, so I love making people laugh, but I also want to make sure that they're going to make money doing it.
Sure. 100%.
You know,
yeah, I've said the same thing. I mean, my criteria, which sounds like pretty well matches yours, which is I don't want to do business with anyone who I wouldn't have over to my house for dinner.
Yeah, I enjoy the camaraderie of an actual client, and that's one of the things that I actually incorporated into my philosophy is friends first, clients second. Mm-hmm. And so people ask me, well, what does that mean? So look, you can call me anytime, anywhere. You're my friend. I will help you. You know, I take that as heart. I've had clients who left me, went somewhere else. I still helped them through the whole ordeal. I still welcomed them back if they wanted to come back. But we still talk on the phone. We still communicate. I'm not one of those people who will say, you know what? You left. Good riddance. I don't want to ever see you again. That's not who I am. And you know, I guess early on, I was like, you know, when I had the cleaning business, I would burn the bridge while I was still on the darn thing. That didn't help me. It didn't. So, you know, when I flipped the script and said, look, you know what? I don't care if the bridge is on fire. I will come rescue you. And that's just who I am.
Yeah, my only story, I was just thinking of how right after September 11th, I went to Cleveland. At the time, I was heavily involved in the self-storage niche. And I went to help a guy on his self-storage business. And at the end of the day, he wrote me a check, a fairly decent sized check for my consulting work. And then he stopped payment on it. And now I'm just wondering whether or not I would still be able to do what you do, which is welcome him back.
Well, you know, one of the things that I implemented this year is bank wire transfers. I do more of those now. I still do a little bit of PayPal, but the problem with PayPal is they up their fees.
Yep.
And when people are writing big checks or making a big payment, I'm losing a car payment or even a mortgage payment trying to process these payments. And it's like, So I said, look, here's my information. Let's bank wire it. My bank charges me $10. You know, so I'm saving a whole bunch of money. And the thing is about a bank wire transfer, they can't stop payment.
Right.
I got their money. So yeah. Here's the thing is that, yes, I'm very particular on who I hire or accept as a client, but they're going to play on my terms now. And yes, I will still back you up. Yes, I will do a lot of things friends do. I will have a beer with you if you really want one. But you know, I want to be. I'm protecting my business too. So you know, I even gotten a lot of my clients who used to write checks, bank wire. And it makes it just so much easier because now they have skin in the game. They can't back out. I think it makes life easier for everyone.
I agree.
You know, the thing is that a lot of banks don't want to do bank wires anymore. They don't make any money. You know, they'd rather be the PayPals of the world where they're charging 3 or 4%.
Yeah, we found a way around it.
Yeah, I got just tired of losing money. I looked at my PayPal fees from last year, and it was like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. You know, I could have bought a car with that kind of money.
I agree.
I think we have to act smarter. We do. As entrepreneurs, we have to look at the bottom line. We have to look at what's actually going to benefit us better. You know, and most clients will comply to whatever payment method that you ask of them. You just have to ask, you know. But I think we get in our heads going, oh, I'm just going to PayPal you. Then you're incurring the fee. And I think one of the things that it wasn't even about me charging PayPal. It was what started this whole thing was going into restaurants. You know, and I've always been this big proponent of build everything into the cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. So those PayPal fees or those credit card fees were, you know, just part of something I accepted. But, you know, you go into a restaurant and your meal, you see this invoice and it says, well, it's $30, but we're going to add 4 or 5% if you pay with a credit card. A couple years ago, that was non-existent. Since COVID, they're all, I don't know if they're all trying to recoup their money or what, but I don't like being nickel and dime, so I don't really want to do that to my clients.
I've got a great example of that for myself, which is probably 8 years ago now. I play a lot of poker. I play poker seriously. And I found this one guy who's a well-known broadcaster and coach in that field. It was about 8 years ago. And I said to him, well, how much do you charge for your coaching? He says, well, it'll be $250 for the hour. I said, that's fine. Let me PayPal it to you. And he said, well, if you PayPal it to me, then I have to add on like $11.33 because that's the fee. And I never did business with him because he wanted to have me pay for his cost of doing business. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is starting to upset so many people right now. But, you know, they also realize, well, everybody's doing it, so I can't get too upset. No, for me as a business owner, I don't like doing that. I don't want to nickel and dime you. I'm going to give you an easy way to pay me. If you need to break it down into two payments, fine, but it's bank wire. Simple as that. And, you know, here's the thing about credit cards, too. Just like checks can be, you know, you can stop payment. Credit cards, you can do a back charge.
Yep.
Which, you know, you do all this work and they just back charged you and PayPal say, well, you've had enough of these, so we're going to shut your account down. I don't want my account shut down. I don't want to, you know, look, if you're legitimately not happy with the work, I will return your money. But don't back charge my credit card, you know, process. Just how I feel.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So, you know, let's get back to equity partnerships. When people work with you, what can they expect to happen?
Well, again, talking about the two different silos here, the one silo being teaching them my system, which is the 90-day, what I call a 90-day accelerator program. What I do is I work with people one-on-one to help them land at least one equity deal in 90 days. And if it doesn't happen that quickly, then we keep extending it. And so I'm interested in, you know, finding people who are interested in wanting to do these kinds of deals, but don't know the mechanics, don't know how to do it. And I show them how to do it one-on-one because it's what I think everyone should be doing if they have an established base of business like we talked about. That's on the 90-day accelerator side. On the other side of the equation, which is partnering with me, I also do something that I think you would appreciate from understanding how you think about business, which is, example, going back to my original partner in the voiceover field, when we decided to get together, it was a 50-50 split after expenses to build this business, which is now, by the way, it's the largest voiceover training company in the world. We got the largest YouTube channel, et cetera, et cetera. But with that business, when we first got started, I said, look, I'm going to be giving you a lot of my time for nothing initially. But as far as the money side, it's going to be your credit card that pays for all the various expenses. And then once we start to generate income, we pay down those expenses that you put up front first before we do our split. So in that case, we needed, back in the day, we paid a guy who was at the same seminar that he was at $15,000 for his SEO expertise. That went on his credit card, not mine. And that debt was retired by the money that we generated first before we then split the 50-50 deal. So when I'm doing a deal with someone as a partnership arrangement, I've also instituted the following, where if someone wants to become a partner, they first start in the 90-day accelerator where they're paying somewhere under 10 grand. And that money is then put into the kitty if they decide to become a partner, and they get paid back that initial amount first. So there always has to be skin in the game on their side, or else no go.
Right. And that is very important. And I want everybody to understand the concept of skin in the game, because, you know, when you're dealing with another person, they need to be on the same level as you. They need to be, you know, have that same excitement. They have to put money down.
Yep.
You know, otherwise there's no accountability.
Correct.
You know, I see it all the time. And I've made those mistakes too. And I, you know, because
we all have.
I, you know, early on there was a client that I really wanted to work with, who, you know, I went to school with, and he's created this massive, you know, educational marketing firm. And the moment I started working for him, I regretted it every day. I mean, it was horrible. And I'm thinking, how did this guy even become who he is? Because he can't market for shit. And it's like, yeah. But it was his name. He built it as a brand, and everybody knew it. And so he wasn't doing the typical marketing that I thought of. It was a lot of word of mouth. But and then, you know, he wanted to embrace the social, and he wanted to embrace the SEO, and but it's like, dude, you're not getting it. So word of mouth is different than social media. It's different than SEO. It's different. And it was a heartache, and it was a push and pull. And I don't like doing that. Everything has to be effortless or feel effortless when you're helping a client. Because I think if there's just too much push and pull, it's not going to work.
Agree.
You know, it's just you know, and now I got my latest book coming out, and it's me being an ethical marketer, teaching people.
What's that one called?
It's called Wait, There's More: The Dirty Secrets Marketers Use to Make You Buy Stuff You Don't Need.
Nice.
You know, and it was, you saw all these commercials, you know, in the 80s and 90s, and that was the whole punchline. Wait, there's more. You got to buy this. You got to buy that. And for me, it's you're always one funnel away from a nervous breakdown. I cannot stand funnels. I want to keep them simple. And everybody else is out there trying to complicate the system. And look, you can sell stuff. You can convince people to buy, but it has to be ethical. It has to be that they want the product, not the
good. You remember Dan Kennedy's old friend Jeff Paul? What happened to him?
Yeah, you know, a lot of them. The problem is a lot of those early adopters of direct response marketing ended up in jail, and the FCC came after him for. No marketer should ever have to go through that. And so,
yeah, I mean, yeah, the list is, it's very long. And I mean, I always used to say to people, I just want to be able to make money without worrying about being in a cell with Bubba.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some of those movies and I'm like, white collar, forget it. I'm not, I wouldn't do well. I don't want to be in jail. I've heard too many stories, and you know, although you know, that's where a lot of people go to learn.
You know, you talk about that. I was just thinking. I was watching I watched the Club Random podcast with Bill Maher, and Tim Allen was on there talking about the fact that Tim Allen was in jail for 3 years. I don't know for what.
Narcotics, I think.
Was it?
But you know, here's the thing: is I've had friends that were in prison. I've had relatives. You know, it's just they come out a different person. They come out. Some of them come out smarter because they've learned how to manipulate. They've learned how to, you know. But there's others that come out and they're beaten. They're so worn down. They don't even want to deal with society anymore. And, you know, that's how sometimes you feel after complex negotiations.
Yeah.
And to me, it's if you had skin in the game to begin with, if you had, you know, all these things in a contract, or even, you know, knowing what you're supposed to receive or give in this relationship, you know, you wouldn't have to have these negotiations. You wouldn't have to feel like you were just beaten down.
Agree.
So how do people find you? Where do they go?
Well, the best way is, again, one of the two sites, either fredgleeklive.com, F-R-E-D-G-L-E-E-C-K, live.com, or join Fred Gleek. But again, to get in the front door on the partnership deal, you have to first do the accelerator, which is the fredgleeklive.com. And that's where I work with someone to help them land an equity deal. If we get along real well, we can convert it into a partnership.
So everyone listening and watching, if you see the benefit in equity partnerships and you want to learn directly from Fred, go to his website. And I think that you're going to learn a great amount of awesomeness, really what it is, because imagine having your own business that you have, you built it, but now you're able to partner with other people and get, you know, equity forever, infinity.
And pass it on.
Yeah, pass it on.
Perfect.
And I think that would be awesome, you know, because now you're, and like the one book I helped with, it's called Boaz on Business, Building Multi-Generational Wealth During Chaotic mm-hmm. Times. This equity partnership helps you do exactly that.
One of the components. Agreed 100%.
So everyone else, we'll see you on the next episode. Adios.